podcast, In AI We Trust? Today is going to be a very special episode because we have a guest that we're going to interview, which we're very excited about. We'll get to that in just a moment. But maybe just very briefly to recap what we talked about last time. Last time we were discussing to what extent an AI is truly unbiased and as objective as it maybe seems. But today we're going to talk about, even if a robot were to be completely unbiased and could very objectively make better decisions than a human, would we really still want them as judges? What consequences would having a robot as a judge have on the function of law in society? So we were going to start off with a little case study. So Mario, would you like to introduce our case study today?
Yes, the case study for today is about the country that is leading the implementation of artificial intelligence, some sort of a proto-digitalization of society, as it's one of the most advanced countries for the integration of technologies, and in this case is the integration of artificial intelligence in law. In March 2019, it was announced that Estonia will design a robot judge that would be able to adjudicate most of the small claims, the small disputes that are approximately less than 7,000 euros. The aim is to clear the backlog of cases in small claims disputes in order to allow human judges and count clerks of these small disputes, for the clerks to have more time to focus and deal of more demanding, of more complex situations, or more complex and important cases. There's no coincidence it's happening in Estonia, as Estonia, it's referred to as Estonia's a very advanced society and very advanced government.
Digitally.
Digitally, of course. Already 99% of public services in Estonia are online, only available online to those citizens. And there's different visions of artificial intelligence, both from the political sides and also for the private sides. Estonia now aims to broaden the scope of AR solutions deployed in the public sector with different artificial intelligence applications and also sets of virtual assistants to make digital public services radically easier to use and more accessible to everyone.
And it's important to mention that, you know, these decisions made by these AI judges, they can still be applied by a human judge. So there isn't a complete replacement yet. But, you know, it really does kind of beg the question, what would happen in a world where, you know, robots completely replace human judges? And for me personally, it's very interesting to think about because, you know, judges also have some sort of a symbolic value, right? You know, they don't just have a role in, you know, making the decisions, but they also have an educative role. You know, and have some sort of societal impact. You know, so in the words of Sodin Khan, you know, we often fall short of realizing the full range of what judges contribute to society beyond adjudication, including, you know, important and often unexamined issues relating to compliance and acceptance of the rule of law. So that's precisely what we're going to talk about today with our interviewee. We're very honored to be joined today by Professor Bertini, who is professor of public law, if I understand correctly, and she was also our political institutions professor last semester. So, you know, we think very highly of her, and we're very glad that she's able to join us and give us a couple insights into the more philosophical and legal implications of what it would really mean to have an AI or a robot as a judge. So thank you very much for being with us today.
Thank you. Thank you for asking. I'm very honored to be here and to participate in this very fascinating and technologically advanced project. I'm glad to be a part of. So as you mentioned, I'm a professor of public law and I specialize in comparative constitutional law. So I probably give an opinion starting from the constitutional point of view as applied to legal theory, which of course is a very large field and goes outside the constitutional aspect, which I'm particularly interested in. And of course, from a theoretical point of view, what comes to mind when we discuss artificial intelligence in justice, in regulating disputes, is theories of interpretation. The very first theoretical problem is what kind of doctrine do we follow in legal interpretation? And of course, the very idea of using artificial intelligence in adjudication starts from a very specific point of view on legal interpretation, the point of view of formalism and the myth of syllogism as being the very, you know, foundation of legal interpretation. If you apply this kind of point of view on legal interpretation, then, I mean, I would say that is the only way that you could give such power to a non-human entity. The only way would be to have a syllogism that is applied, and so if A, B, C is verified, then Z is the legal consequence, is the legal decision. And so in this idea, the application of the rule is something that can be subsumed by facts. And so once you have established or qualified facts, then the artificial intelligence, as well as the judge, the human judge, would know which rule is to be applied, and then the rule is applied, and the solution is almost automatic.
And an important thinker in this regard also is Hans Kelsen, right, who, you know, founded this positivist school of law. And, you know, for him it was particularly important that no, you know, social aspects that are always debated and contested, you know, can influence law. But, you know, it has a much more formal structure that, you know, can save the law from this politicization. And so the AI in this sense kind of becomes a modern day, what Max Weber would have called a paragraphenautomat. So it's really this idea like, you know, you can put in the information, you can put in the facts, and out from the law, purely from the law and nothing else, you'll come to like a calculated judgment, which in turn can guarantee a rational application of the law in a bureaucratic state.
And so, of course, this formalist view of legal interpretation is highly contested and is, or at least was, unless it is coming back with those attempts in artificial intelligence, but it was losing the war of legal doctrines, losing it to at least some form of realism, which of course is the opposite of legal formalism. Realism would put all the intention of legal interpretation in the human aspects of the judge, and as you probably know, the maybe a bit extraordinary or exaggerated vision of American legal realists such as Oliver Wendell Holmes,
well, he wrote in his opening paragraph of The Common Law that the life of law has not been logic, it has been experience, right? The felt necessities of the time, the prevalent moral and political theories, intuitions of public policy, avowed or unconscious, and even the prejudices which judges share with their fellow men, have had a good deal more to do than the syllogism in determining the rules by which men should be governed. The law embodies the story of a nation's development through many centuries, and it cannot be dealt with as if it contained only the axioms and corollaries of a book of mathematics. And this is also in line with thinkers such as Eugen Ehrlich, who coined the term living law, this idea that the laws that regulate social life might be very different from the norms, you know, that we find in legal texts and may sometimes have much greater cultural authority, you know, which lawyers cannot morally and safely ignore.
The doctrine was born as a criticism toward all this humanity. And judges, the fact that judges were using or were interpreted as using their own personal tastes and values, and even, you know, just the mood of the day to judge, was considered to be very negative for the for the people, for the citizens that were in front of a judge and were somehow submitted to all those sways and moods and characters and political preferences. And so in that sense, it would be a good thing. The thing is that more contemporary and more moderate views on legal realism, they start from not as much the point of view of criticism. Of course, it is a critical doctrine, but the first point is that legal language is impossible to actually know. So the basis of legal realism is in fact a form of skepticism toward the very possibility of knowing what the law means. And because of that impossibility, you need the humanity of a judge that would interpret the law. Of course, with all the possible negative consequences, which would be being subjected to the political preferences of someone. But then the point, the departure point, the starting point is that actually the law doesn't mean anything. And if you think that, if you follow that kind of skepticism, or even a more moderate view on it, the idea that, well, maybe the law means something, but at least more than two possible interpretations that you can choose from, and still someone has to choose one of all those possibilities, even though they're not infinite, or, you know, it's not 10,000 possibilities, but at least three or four, then you need someone who would use their power of interpretation to actually interpret.
So there's really like big arguments whether like the precedents and the, you know, standard interpretations of the law should be followed in a specific case, you know, an AI. Can they make that kind of decision?
Well, then in legal realism, you have a new element that appears, which is strategy. There is a strategy that courts follow, or at least appear to follow, that is not to reverse themselves too often, for example. And so following precedents in that sense would not be as much as an obligation, but more of a smart and useful strategy to be legitimate and not to appear erratic or completely absurd. And so it is not because there is a clear interpretation or a clear meaning of the law that they follow precedent, but because it is more stable and people tend to follow courts more if they appear to be, you know, not erratic and not absurd in their behavior. So this is another part of legal realism, which is the theory of constraints, which is a sort of theory of strategic legal interpretation. So of course, I go back to what you were asking, is it positive or negative? I would say that it very much depends on what your idea of interpretation is. So from one end, it is positive if you look at judicial interpretation as being too much linked to personal politics, for example, of judges. On the other hand, it can be very negative if you feel that the legal syllogism is a myth. And so in that sense, artificial intelligence in judgments, in judicial decision, follows this myth that it's actually an ideal, but it doesn't exist. There is no possible way to make, you know, A plus B equal a certain specific legal solution that would be certain. Of course, and this is probably where you hear the constitutional lawyer speaking, this that I just said would depend on which field of the law you apply artificial intelligence to. Okay, so there are, for example, a lot of startups that are starting to work on proofreading contracts with artificial intelligence. That, of course, is an application of the law that is in many ways mechanical. It's always the same. The idea is to look for errors, human, you know, mistakes. So that is one thing. Judging is another thing. Is it, you know, this case of Estonia, for example, that you had mentioned, where only small cases in the sense of, you know, economically small, would use those artificial intelligent judges and not for the appeals, so not at every level of judgment. Is that because the cases are simpler? Yes, this is what it is. And this is the thing. I'm not sure that anyone, as of today at least, would really suggest the use of artificial intelligence for balancing constitutional rights, for example.
And I'm really glad you brought up fundamental rights, because as we discussed in your class last year, you know, sometimes fundamental rights and laws conflict. And, you know, Dworkin and Alexei say, you know, that maybe some of these rights cannot be respected fully because of that, but only to a degree. And in making decisions, you have to use morality to decide which you want to respect to the highest degree. So this kind of morality and contextual knowledge in those cases becomes absolutely essential. So now that we've kind of summarized this great legal debate between formalism and realism that really takes center stage in regards to the use of AI, we're going to take a small little break, and when we come back, we'll keep talking with Professor Patini more about the accountability of judges and how the process of law is really an important part of its own function. So we'll be right back, and stay tuned for an exciting second half.